I always feel like I have to say, hey, thanks for coming.
You just never know what might happen, right? Strike one is Randy speaking. Strike two is a business meeting after. One more strike and I'm not going. It's that simple. And I was kind of thinking about staying at home myself, quite honestly. But I did get encouraging words from the pastor yesterday in a text message. He writes, "You ready for tomorrow afternoon in James?" And I said, "Define ready." So he gives me a screen capture from Oxford Dictionary. Having multiple options to choose from, I went with, "In a suitable state for an activity, action, or situation, fully prepared." I said, I go with that, up to fully prepared. I never meet that. And with more encouraging words, "Good deal, stay nervous." But I felt much better after I saw the emoji smiley face. There is a certain aspect of coming up here that causes nervousness that is difficult to shake off. Looking back over a history of doing this numerous times, you find occasionally, in review, you have said something totally stupid. And worse yet, sometimes it's just not right. And with that, it's really hard not to be nervous because I never know what next stupid thing will come out of my mouth. But today we're going to go to James chapter 3, starting at verse 13. And reading the balance of the chapter. "Who is a wise man and endued with knowledge among you? Let him show out of a good conversation his works with meekness of wisdom. But if ye have bitter envying and strife in your hearts, glory not, and lie not against the truth. This wisdom descendeth not from above, but is earthly, sensual, devilish. For where envying and strife is, there is confusion and every evil work. But the wisdom that is from above is first pure, then peaceable, gentle, easy to be entreated, full of mercy and good fruits, without partiality and without hypocrisy. And the fruit of righteousness is sown in peace of them that make peace." Interesting in the way that James approaches his writings, some have compared this to Proverbs, where it's just snippets of thought and idea. But a closer perspective of this, you suddenly realize that he's weaving together a tapestry. And so that thread may not appear till later on, but yet you can find where he has already referenced the thought, and now he is going deeper with that thought. Now, from week 3, James chapter 1 and verse 5, the concept of wisdom was brought up in that verse. That material was covered by our pastor. And with that, he said, "Through our trials, we are to be seeking godly wisdom, which he willingly bestows, generously, gently, so that we will apply," and this is where you got to catch on hold of this one, "so that we will apply his wisdom in faithful action." And that's all from the pastor paraphrased. Last week's sermon was about the unruly tongue. The words we speak can be out of control and cause problems. Our words can be two-faced, hypocritical, and wicked, and they originate from our heart. Today, we're going to talk about two wisdoms, one earthly and the other heavenly. One that causes strife and is marked by that hypocritical tongue that we've already discussed, not me, but the pastor. The other wisdom produces peace. Only one can be described as the true wisdom. Heavenly wisdom is exercised in meekness, seen by the good conduct of our lives. So again, from verses 13 and 14, "Who is a wise man and endued with knowledge among you? Let him show out of a good conversation his works with meekness of wisdom. But if ye have bitter envying and strife in your hearts, glory not and lie not against the truth." So what is James saying here as he introduces this topic? He says, "Do you consider yourself to be wise, intelligent, Is that the way you perceive yourself? Well, step on up. Don't tell us how much you know. Even if it is to the depths of doctrine and the depths of theology. Like Andrew, he can brag about that deep theological understanding he now has from having taken my class. And he's laughing. He missed that class, right? As it says here in verse 13, it's called good conversation. That's from the old King James. It actually means conduct or manner of life. Let your life be analyzed by the credibility of your claim. The genuine expression of wisdom in the book of James is seen in the application of godly wisdom and faithful action. He actually puts more emphasis on how are you living it out as opposed to how are you talking about it. Last month, Andrew spoke on a similar concept from James chapter 2 and verse 18. James instructed his readers that their faith by their works would show. But an inactive faith is dead. And as James explained, after works and faith cannot be separated, here too we're going to find a godly wisdom and a godly life are inseparable. James chapter 1 and verse 21 express the need to lay aside all filthy wickedness that plagues us, so that we might humbly accept the message of God. And through the message of God, we will learn how to live humbly before God and before man. And therein display for everyone to see godly wisdom in action. Now in verse 14, he starts to define what godly wisdom is not. It's not jealousy. It's not envy. It's not characterized by strife and boasting. These are things that are not characterized by godly wisdom. If a person who considers himself to be wise holds the envy and self-ambition, that person is living a lie. Claiming to be wise but conducting their life in a way that denies the claim of wisdom. Bitter envy and selfish ambition are contrary to humility. And if humility marks the wise person, then bitter envy, selfish ambition mark the person without the heavenly wisdom. In fact, the person who goes about boasting and bragging about their wisdom is sinning against the truth. Verse 15 says, "This wisdom descendeth not from above, but is earthly, sensual, devilish." So what is the source of the envy and the selfish ambition? Well, it's not from heaven. It's from the world. And it holds to the standards of the world. You know, folks, sometimes the good thoughts that you have that meet with the worldly standards aren't necessarily godly standards. I'll give you an example of something that sounded really wise. David, as king, numbered his troops. Sounds like a good idea. Even Jesus said that the king who has fewer troops than the advancing army should count them up and see what they want to do. You want to go to war or you want to go to peace talks? Sounded like a good idea. God was opposed to counting that army. God brought discipline against the nation of Israel for David's error. And the reason was not because he did a good thing as a general of the army. It was because he wanted to see how strong his army was in numbers and ignored the strength of his God. His trust was in, hey, if we got another 1,000, we're going to be big enough. Instead, he only needed one God. But in his thoughts, it seemed reasonable to count your troops, to understand what you're capable of. But that's not what God wanted. So it isn't always the earthly standards. They're going to stand up and go, hey, this is devilish. Don't. It doesn't work that way. Sometimes it sounds logical. It sounds reasonable. And yet, it isn't in the will and wisdom of God. We have to have an understanding to separate those two wisdoms. One way to do so is because the worldly standard, the worldly wisdom, is unspiritual. It embodies the natural man, and it is of Satan. Envy, self-ambition originated with Satan. From Isaiah chapter 14, verses 13 through 14, marking the words of Satan himself, I will ascend to heaven above the stars of God. I will set my throne on high. I will sit on the mount of assembly in the far reaches of the north. I will ascend above the heights of the cloud. I will make myself like the Most High. That's the originator of these kind of concepts. Inside the congregation, it can be, well, I can obviously sing better than Larry. I should be the song leader. I shouldn't be the song leader. I'm pretty sure if you ever heard me, you would agree with that. But there's that envy, that strife, that selfish ambition that says that I should be preeminent above the other members of the congregation. Just as Satan said, I should be preeminent above his own creator. And with that, we have to analyze our thoughts all the time. Am I thinking in a manner in which Christ thought, who humbled himself? Or am I thinking in a manner that makes me want to have preeminence over somebody else? It's a tricky business, quite honestly. It's not as easy to understand to be self-aware of your thoughts. It's not as easy as it sounds. They don't just hop up and say, that's an evil thought, cut it out. Sometimes it's just the way the nature of your being forces you to want to achieve that, which may sound as though it's good, but actually is not the heavenly wisdom. In James chapter 1 and verse 17, the pastor covered this portion. Every good gift, every perfect gift is from above and cometh down from the Father of lights, with whom is no variableness, neither shadow of turning. The good gifts come from God, and the gifts from God are the opposite of the earthly natured, unspiritual, and devilish standards of this world. They are heavenly in nature, spiritual in essence, and divine in origin. So keep those in mind. The thoughts you have that may seem logical as David's may actually turn out to be as self-possessed as Satan's. Are they heavenly in nature, spiritual in essence, divine in origin? Got to tick all the boxes on that one. Otherwise, it moves to the earthly wisdom. In verse 16 of our text, for where envy and strife is, there is confusion and every evil work. So we saw the source of it. Now we're looking at the results of envy and ambition. Well, guess what happens when you get worldly wisdom? You're going to get worldly results. It's not going to suddenly change in the process. And those results are disorder. Paul instructed the Corinthians in the way to ensure orderly worship in the church in 1 Corinthians 14:33 in regard to tongues. Well, you can't have Harry over here speaking in tongues and Loretta next to him contradicting him in tongues. While over here, we got the same thing going on with Jerry and Teresa. Pretty soon, we've lost our focus. We can't listen to anybody. We're not paying attention to the service. So, that's the disorder that and confusion from James and from Paul. James is warning that that envy and ambition that he's been talking about among the members of the church can cause disorder, confusion, disunity. And he's particularly identifying the leaders. Last week was, "My brethren, be not many masters, knowing that we shall receive the greater condemnation." That's verse 1 of chapter 3. Specifically, James has this group of people in mind, because they have the potential to damage the unity and order of the church. Ultimately, the wrong kind of wisdom can result in every evil work from that disorder. Everything that you can possibly imagine can go wrong, can go wrong when you get into disorder. In verse 17, we see the other wisdom. We see the results. James says that it can finalize itself in evil works. It's earthly. It's devilish. It produces no good thing. But then, in contrast to that wisdom, James says, "But the wisdom that is from above is pure, peaceable, gentle, easy to be entreated, full of mercy, good fruits, without partiality, and without hypocrisy." The contrast of the wisdoms can be seen by the qualities of life that exemplifies those. In Galatians chapter 5, Paul calls these the fruit of the Spirit. Here in James, he starts off by saying, first of all, it's pure. The first preeminent and greatest attribute that wisdom produces is purity. It signifies innocence and moral blamelessness. Paul used this in 2 Corinthians 11:2 when he said he desired to present the church as a pure virgin to Christ. There's six attributes listed after the purity. First one is peace-loving. Obviously, with bitter envy, selfish ambition, that person doesn't have any interest in peace. They only have interest in getting what they want. Gentle means to be considerate. Easy to be entreated. Again, goes back to a statement made by James previously in James 1:19, where it is swift to hear, slow to speak. In other words, to be easy and entreated is to be open to reason. That doesn't mean open to every possible change that comes down the pipe, because it sounds good. It means that you will listen. There is every possibility that whatever it is that causes the conflict, they just might be the right one. You might be the one that wants to prove yourself right. Open your ears, slow to speech, listen to what they have to say, and consider the possibility between the two wisdoms, theirs might be on the right track. Goes on to say, full of mercy and good fruits. James' definition of mercy is expressed by a display of action. He combines mercy so closely with good fruit acts of mercy are fruits that wisdom from above produce. And we know from previous study in James that when he talks about mercy, wisdom, he's always talking about action. He never moves away from that. He's always pushing people forward. Don't tell somebody to have a good life, be warm and be filled. He says, present them with clothing, present them with food. That's how you show your faith. Next is without partiality. And we covered that also. And I kind of like this flipping around and make sure that it's all connected. These things are not, this is not a book of Proverbs. This is a book of ideas. This is a book of action. So he's referencing back to chapter 2, verses 1 through 4, where he says, some of you are partial. You're partial to somebody that can benefit you. And you know them because they come in good clothes. Others come in here poorly dressed, shabbily dressed. You know they're poor, therefore they can't do anything for you. You show partiality by spending your time with the rich. Once again, he picks up that thought. And he says, the wisdom that is from above doesn't perform like that. Not saying it, but going into, you know, Paul's writings, what did Jesus do? I mean, if anybody was going to be partial, I came from heaven, and I came down here to earth. Who is my equal that I can hang out with? Nobody. If anybody had a right to partiality, it'd be Christ. So what right do any of us have to treating people differently based upon the criteria of, where does that come from? Earthly. Because earthly wisdom will say what? Make friends with the rich guy because he's probably going to be able to help you out. Heavenly wisdom, what does it say? Search out that poor person because maybe you can be beneficial to them. And finally, he says, without hypocrisy, without a hidden agenda, sincere. That's what it looks like with the heavenly wisdom. Verse 18, and the fruit of righteousness is sown in peace of them that make peace. Everybody's familiar with the adage that you reap what you sow. Well, James chapter 3 tells us what we live is what we sow. Back to all of James tells us what we live is what we sow. That's why he's encouraging us to have that godly faith in action, that godly wisdom in action. Because he knows to not do that is going to leave you in a world of hurt. In verse 8 of chapter 3, it says that the tongue can no man tame. And that is a fact. No man can control that thing. It's got a mind of its own. But through the power of God, we learned last week, our hearts can be changed and our words will be changed. And through the power of God's heavenly wisdom, our lives can be changed and we can develop the characteristics of, verse 17, peace-loving, gentle, merciful, sincere. The righteousness cannot be produced in the context of human anger. That was covered in chapter 1, verse 20. And it says straight out, for the anger of man does not produce the righteousness of God. Because anger doesn't bring peace. And in this verse, we're seeing that righteousness is sown in anger, harsh words, uncontrolled tongues. No. It's sown in peace. Anger is not going to bring it forth. Trying to fulfill your own desires won't bring it out either. But righteousness can grow and flourish in the atmosphere of peace. You remember what Jesus said about the peacemakers in the Beatitudes? Do you want to be a peacemaker? What's the reward for being a peacemaker? Called the children of God, a son of God. That's a stretch for a guy like me. So peacemakers are able to plant seeds of peace and reap a harvest of goodness. A harvest that leads to a controlled tongue and promotes peace. In this chapter, James has been speaking to and about leaders of the church. Those who hold positions of responsibility will be held to stricter judgment by God. It says that in verse 1, in case you think I made it up. Okay. So it says here, knowing that we shall receive the greater condemnation. Speaking about the masters or the teachers. Leaders are to control their tongues. They're to show by the good conduct of their lives that they are directed by heavenly wisdom. That's exercised in meekness. What about everybody else that's not a leader in the church? Are they excused from that standard? Yeah, I don't think so. It says in verse 1, masters will receive the greater judgment. It doesn't say the rest of you are excluded from judgment. It just falls a little bit heavier on those who are considered leaders. It's an interesting day that I landed on this particular material. I don't know if the pastor did that on purpose or not. I'll blame him for it regardless, but it's business meeting Sunday. That's a really good time to think about exercising James's ideas. It's a really good time in a business meeting. Tame the tongue. Display heavenly wisdom. Display verse 17 with peace, loving, gentle, submissive, merciful, fruit-bearing, without partiality, sincere words. So when we go into that meeting, whenever we have discussions of any type in this church, on any topic, remember James and his admonition to us. There's earthly wisdom and it brings division. There's heavenly wisdom and it brings peace. Let us move forward as a church to be peacemakers.